Baruchim Haboyim. This evening we begin tape number 19. And before we begin, I'd like to express appreciation and gratitude to the congregation Tomchei Torah and to Reb Feivel Cohen Shlita for giving us the forum able to disseminate the shiurim. Bezras Hashem, we continue on not until May of Yesrim, as we all know, this is a series of short series of 1,000 shiurim dealing with your teenager. One of the most basic realities of the world, together with the fact that the sky is blue and that goes up, comes down, and that 1 + 1 = 2, is that nobody's happy with their job. You have a lawyer, for instance. A lawyer worked hard to become a lawyer. Went to law school, junior partner, then a partner, and he worked very hard. Somewhere around middle age, he gets bored with his job. He's bored of typing same thing all the time, notwithstanding heretofore, whereas, words like that. He hates his briefcase. He hates the fact that when people ask him what he does for a living, he tells them, they look at him as if he said, Nazi. He wishes he had something more interesting to do with his life. He was a water ski instructor. He went water skiing once. He remembers how exciting it was. And he sits there in his suit wishing that that's what he was doing for a living. Somewhere out there, there's a middle-aged water skiing instructor that hates his job. He wishes that he would do something that is taken seriously in the world. It's the fact that when people ask him what he does for a living, he tells them, they look at him as if he said, Bozo the Clown. He wishes he could do something more respectable. Serious. Wishes he was a doctor. Except the problem is that we know that doctors can't stand their jobs. Always getting sued. Can't stand getting woken up in the middle of the night for silly things that patients think are emergencies. They hate the fact that everybody thinks that they're rich. It's examining people day after day. They wish they were able to sit in an office in a suit and make a living like a lawyer, writing words such as whereas and heretofore and notwithstanding. That's the way the world is. The grass is always greener on the other side, particularly where it comes to a person's livelihood. How many people do you know that wake up in the morning and say to their wife, Wife, I'm so happy. I'm going to meet my boss. When they get to their office, they give their boss a hug and a kiss. Boss, I'm so glad to see you this morning. I love you. I love my job. I love to be here. When 5 o'clock comes, you got to chase him out of there because they have to close up and he loves his job. You have to force him to go on vacation. Why would he want to leave his boss and his workplace? We know that this is the stuff of fantasies, and the truth is that there's any one curse in the Torah that we are able to feel every day, it's that of Bezeyas Apecha Toichalecha. By the side of your brow, you'll eat bread. Which just brings up a question. Because the Gemara states in Masechta Brachos on Daf Mem Gimel Amid Beis that everybody likes their job. This is what the Gemara says. Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, Amar Rav, Mai Dechsiv Es Hakoil Oso Ofa Beitoi. Hakadosh Baruch Hu made everything proper in its time. Melamed, it teaches you, says the Gemara. Kol echod v'echod, feiloi hakadosh baruch hu umnosoi b'fonov. Hashem makes each individual's job, each individual's livelihood, sweet to him. So the Gemara says. Now isn't this strange? Isn't this hard to understand? From all the things that are sweet to you and to your husbands and wives, to all the people that you know, you have to make a list of all the things that are sweet, that are nice, that are yafa, in your life and in the lives of the people that you know. Where would your job be? I see from the faces in the audience that we don't really understand the Gemara all that well. And the truth is that Ashi over here comes to the rescue, explains to us how this works. Yafeloi umnosoi, says Rashi, vafilu bursi, even a tanner. A tanner is somebody that works in processing the hides of an animal. Now a tannery was a place with a seriously foul odor. Nobody wanted to be a bursi or a burski. Nobody wanted to be one. It was the same as, let's say, garbage cleaner nowadays, a sewer worker. Now she's saying, even a bursi loves his job. V'oso HaKadosh Baruch Hu kein, Hashem made this so, shlo yechzar ha'olam umnois, so that the world will not be deprived of any jobs. We need tanners, we need garbage men, and we need sewer cleaners. And because the world needs these things, Hashem has given to certain individuals a leaning, a liking towards those jobs, so that job will be filled in the world and the world will have what it needs. That's what Rashi says. Now we have to look very carefully at what he's saying here. He's not saying that if you choose a job based upon society's standards of success, you're going to be happy in your job. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say that if you become a lawyer because a lawyer means success in today's society, that you're going to be happy being a lawyer. No, just the opposite. Rashi says that every individual has a natural tendency towards a certain lifestyle, towards a certain parnosa, including a tanner, including a garbage man, including a street cleaner. And this natural tendency is what you are supposed to, what you are destined, what you are fated to pursue. And if you do pursue it, then you will be happy with your job. If you don't pursue it, if you ignore or even combat your natural leanings or tendencies towards a certain parnasa, and you choose in favor of society's standards or your parents' expectations of you, my son the lawyer, my son the doctor, my son the fire chief, if you choose your profession without regard for your natural leanings, Gemara never meant to say that you're going to be happy in it. This would explain very well why there are so many people so unhappy with their jobs and with their lifestyles. Reason is this. Every human being is an individual. And success means something different for each person. And I'm not talking now about Ruchnius. I'm not talking about success as a Ben Torah. There are 613 common denominators that spell success for all of us. But in Ruchnius too, there is different guidelines, different criteria for success, for different individuals. But here we're not even talking about one person being a big Rosh Hashiva, another person being a big Rav, another person being a Bal Musar, another person being a Baki, and another being a Lamda. We're not talking about this. We're talking about simply making money. And the Gemara is telling us that success in Parnassa, in career, means something different to every person. Because Hashem, takes a look and sees all the different jobs that the world needs, and he creates individuals that are cut out for all of those jobs. You're all like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle that fit in the right spot. If we want to be happy with our jobs, and we must follow our own individual tendencies and pursue the career that's right for us. And it includes a bursi, it includes a street cleaner, it includes a shoemaker, it includes doctors, lawyers, and water skiing instructors as well. Now imagine if your child would come over to you and say, "Mommy, I want to be a shoemaker when I grow up." Imagine if your son was able to be wise enough, tune in to his own natural tendencies, and say he was that person in Rashi's example that has natural leanings towards being a bursi, a tanner. And your son came to you and said, "I want to pursue a career in a smelly tannery. That's what I like." Well, you'd immediately send him to the guidance counselor, because he doesn't want to be a success. He doesn't want to be a doctor. He doesn't want to be a lawyer. What's the matter with him? If your child came to you and said he wanted to be a shoemaker, you'd call and find a referral to a psychologist. What kind of child wants to be a shoemaker? What kind of career is a shoemaker? Who says you can't be an Erlich, a shoemaker? Who says you can't be a good Jew, being a shoemaker? It says in the Gemara that Hashem has created natural tendencies in each one of us for different careers. Society isn't that generous. Society has convinced us we have been bamboozled by our American civilization into thinking that if you don't become a doctor or a lawyer or a big businessman or a certified public accountant or whatever, then you're not a success. If you don't win the rat race, if you don't run the rat race, then you're not a success. And that's terrible. It breeds unhappiness. How many people out there have natural tendencies towards all sorts of different careers, yet because of societal pressures and influences, they channel their energies and their efforts into one direction that they are not cut out for, because they are convinced that this elusive phantom called success will be theirs if they do what society wants them to do. Hence, we have so many people that are unhappy with their jobs because they did not choose their careers based upon what's best for them, but rather what they perceive to be considered success based upon society's standards. And this is a very important lesson and principle in Chinuch. We see the extent to which the rule Chanoich Lenar al pi darkoi applies. We see how different and how individualized our children's needs are. Some people are naturally cut out to be tanners. How far from our imagination is this fact? How vite and how bizarre we look upon a statement such as this: tanners, individual tendencies. No, everybody's running the same race. Make money. We talk out of both sides of our mouths. On one side of our mouth, we say money doesn't bring happiness. On the other side of our mouth, if our child wants to grow up to be anything but wealthy or anything but middle class, you think there's something wrong with him. Sure, money doesn't buy happiness, but you better try to get it anyway. That's our attitude. Money doesn't buy happiness, but if you're not interested in it, then there's something wrong with you. That doesn't make any sense at all. None at all. This applies, according to the Gemara, to careers. Not only Does it apply to careers? It applies to every facet of a child's life. We're talking here about parents' expectations of a child based upon parents' own concepts of success as opposed to what the children are cut out for. Think, you parents who feel, no, I know that my child is an individual and whatever makes him happy. Think, what would you do if your child came to you and said, Mommy, I want to be a shoemaker when I grow up. I want to be an Erech Yid, I want to be a tzaddik. I want to be a Talmud Chacham, I want to learn a lot of Torah, and I want to bring up a wonderful family. I don't want my head, my parnasa. When I come home at night at 5 o'clock, I want to be able to give my family their full attention. I don't want to spend my life in college learning all sorts of things that are unimportant and sometimes even anti-Torah. I want to be a good Jew, and I want to be able to support my family modestly. I want to be a shoemaker. What would you do? What you should do is throw your hands up to the Shemayim and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you had so much siyata d'shmaya in bringing up this child, and then find him a vocational school that specializes in shoemakers. That's not what we would do. We know it's one of the basic principles of chinuch, that each child is different. But we don't realize how different. A child grows up in a family where the father is a koilel younger man. A child isn't as frum as the rest of the family. There are mitzvahs, he learns, but his mannerisms and his lifestyle don't jive with that of the rest of the family. Let's say he's a boy and he'll wear his yarmulke on top of his head instead of the back. He'll grow his chup a little longer. Maybe he won't wear his hat outside during the weekdays. Whatever. Maybe some sign of a deeper problem, depending upon the boy's motive, or changing the direction of his upbringing. It may not. Of course, we want our children to identify with B'nai Torah. And of course, we want our children to grow up even frummer than we are. We also have to understand that our children are individuals in and of themselves. And you have to ask yourself a very uncomfortable question. Namely, am I upset with my child because he's not as good as he could be? Because he's not what he should be? Or am I upset with my child because he's not what I want him to be? Am I upset with my child because he is not the way I wish he would be? Or am I upset with my child because he is not what he should be? Big difference. It's a big shock for a set of parents to suddenly realize that their child is not going in the direction that they had hoped and wished and tried him to go. I remember reading an article from a mother who found out that the child had Down syndrome, Rahmana Litzlan. What a shock it is to want and prepare for and hope for a child, and you, in your mind you envision them and you visualize them and you imagine them growing up and growing older and all the ways that you set your mind for. And boom, none of this is going to happen. It's going to be totally different. It's a shock. What I'm saying now is a mushal, not a dimion. It's an analogy, not a comparison. So too is this analogous to somebody whose child, in a spiritual sense, is not what they expect. The difference is, child that's born with a physical problem, medical problem, parents don't try to ignore it, to deny it. They don't try to change him and dress him and treat him as if he'd be an average common child. because they know it's an exercise in futility. Where Ruchnius is concerned, however, very often that's exactly what is done. The fact that the child is different than the family is ignored, it's denied. The family tries and wishes that they could and would and hope that they will be successful in just forcing the child to be something that he's not cut out to be. I must tell you that in the greatest families of our greatest gedolim, fathers and sons that are so different from each other, father's gedolim and son's gedolim, but so different. I know a man, a Rosh Hashiva. He's a Rosh Hashiva, a big lamdan. I found myself sitting next to him at a chasana, and he's telling me that he's complaining about son. Son is a big masmid. Son is a ben Torah. His son refuses to accept his derech halimud, his style of learning. Wouldn't accept the father's style of learning. Son was learning faster. Son wasn't as deep as the father. The son wasn't cut out for the father's type of learning. So he was learning in a different way. Doesn't know what to do. Doesn't know what to do to try to get his child to learn with the right derech halimud. The right derech halimud means my derech halimud. I told him it's a pity that the stipler, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, is not alive anymore. Because the stipler had the same problem. Stipler had a son who didn't learn the same method, the same style as the stipler did. Stipler, for those who are unfamiliar, is quintessential yeshiva shalamdan. There were great gedolim and great lamdanim, but the type of lamdis and the type of learning that's done in yeshiva nowadays, the average yeshiva bacha, the average rebbe, is that style is done to perfection by the stipler more than, let's say, Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rav Aaron Kotler, whose methods of learning were not exactly the way that our yeshiva rebbeim are learning. Even Rav Aaron's was different. Out of contradiction, the stipler was the quintessential example of the successful yeshiva shalamdan. Son didn't learn that way. Son, a little boy by the name of Chaim, learned fast, learned up a lot, chals, medrashim, shainim, achroinim. Man grew up, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, is from the great Gedolei Hador today. From the greatest people alive in our generation. From the biggest and greatest Talmidei Chachamim. Svarim are mind-boggling feats of encyclopedic Torah knowledge, the likes of which have not been seen since the Rogatchover, probably. Chazals and the type of things that he's expert in. And he grew up to be a gadol on the great Gedolei Hador, but so different than his father. So different. I must tell you that this past week I was by Rav Palm in his office. An issue came up, a decision on my part in dealing with one of the kids that I deal with. And it was a tough decision to make. If I make the wrong decision, I'd be doing the kid great harm. There were two clear paths available to me, and I didn't know which one to take. I asked Rav Palm what he thinks, and Rav Palm said he doesn't know. So he hears both sides. He says, I don't know. He said I should go to the great Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael. I asked him if he could be specific and recommend me somebody to go to. He mentioned a few people, but the first name that came out of his mouth, he says, go to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. It was this week, a few days ago. No different. Imagine if the stipler wasn't as great as he was. Imagine if the stipler was only as great a person as this Rosh Hashiva sitting next to me. That hasana. And imagine what would have happened if he would have tried to coerce, to force, to kvetch his son into being a certain style of Ben Taira, a certain type of Ben Taira that he's not cut out to be. He probably would not have Reb Chaim Kanievsky to go to like we do now. We parents love our children for many reasons. There are many psychological, biological, sociological reasons why we love our children. One of the reasons why the bonds between parent and child is so close is because through our children, we feel like we live forever. They are our eternity. We continue through them, and there's truth to that. Bro kara diavua. Kara, the Mefarshim say, come from the word ani, that the child continues where the father stopped. And we like so much to see part of ourself in our children. And therefore, we are tempted to try make our children into little scale models of us, or better than us, which means we try to make them into what we want us to be, or we wish we would be, or we think we actually are. We like to see ourselves in our children. And that's not always the way it's supposed to be. Oh yeah, there always will be part of us in our children if we bring them up properly and we guide them and we direct them and we make them a success, meaning we make them happy, meaning we make them Bnei Torah, meaning we make them Talmidei Chachamim, Adikim. And that part of us will always be in there. To be twins of us, to be clones of us, they're not always cut out to be. This applies to Frumkeit, this applies to Gashmius, this applies to everything in the world. Our children are totally an individual. Total individuals. You have a daughter, perhaps she'll grow up and marry a Sephardi. You're an Ashkenazi. And then, her whole life changes. You go to her for Pesach, you won't even recognize the Seder. And your own daughter, who used to sit on your lap and maybe say the Manishtana at the Seder, used to bring home those little Pesach sheets from school that you used to save and bring out by the Seder, is now involved in this. I don't know what it is. Al pi din, that's what she's supposed to be doing now. And the einikloch are going to be svardim. I'm not telling you not to do it. What I'm telling you is that your children can be successful and happy and be nothing like you. You know the old vorts that the Bali Musar say. You say you love something. It may mean one of two things. It may mean that you love that thing or that person. Or it may mean that you love yourself. When you say, I love chocolate, or I love ice cream, what does that mean? Does it mean that you love the ice cream? The ice cream is so wonderful, you are in love with that ice cream? No. What do you have with the ice cream? Love the chocolate, you chop it up. You eat it. That's what you do to a chocolate that you love. You love yourself. Because the chocolate gives you a good taste, because the ice cream makes you feel good, because this person makes you feel good, that's why you say you love it, that's why you say you love them. But you don't really love them, you love you. You love what this person is, or this object is doing for you. A very important difference. When you say to your child, I love you, does that mean you love the child? Or does that mean you love the nachas and the pride and the feeling that your child gives you? If the answer is two, that means you don't really love your child, you love yourself. You love your child the way you love ice cream. There's nothing wrong with loving the nachas and the pride that you get from the child. But if that's all that there is to your feelings towards the child, if that's the extent of it, then it's a problem. It has to be both. If that's all there is, then there's a problem. That's the objective. That's the goal. Bring up our children as individuals in a way that's best for them, as opposed to what meets our expectations. The question is how to do it. And this evening I'll give you just the first step. And it's a step that's consistent with one of the fundamental principles that we've laid out at these shiurim, and that is, if you want to affect your children, the first step is to affect yourselves in that way. Applied to our situation, it translates to, if you want your children to grow up being happy, and to reach their own individual, customized, particular potential, and you have to throw off the expectations and the standards voiced upon you by society, by the community, and by all other outside factors beyond your individual mission in this world. What is your idea of success? When your child comes to you, your child wants to confide in you. Your child wants to tell you what's doing inside of them, what they want out of life, what their goals are, what their objectives are, what their feelings are, what their thoughts are. Are they perhaps scared, frustrated to talk to you because whatever they say is not going to be acceptable or satisfactory if it doesn't meet what our community wants? What our society wants? Perhaps they're not going to tell you what they really want to do with their life because they know that speaking to you about it is futile. Why? Because they don't need any input from you. All you are is a carbon copy, a mimic of everybody else out there also. In the case of Parnassa, you don't need a parent to tell you that the more money you make, the more successful you be. You don't need a parent to tell you that the more prestigious a job you're involved in, the more you can consider yourself a success. What do you need a parent to tell you that for? You don't need a parent to tell you the more chashuv in the community you are, the more of a success you are. No. Baruch Hashem, we have a wonderful frum community whose standards for success are a million miles above those of the non-from world. But the truth is that we need all types of Jews. We need all types of B'nai Torah. We need all types of people in all types of jobs. A big Talmud Chacham, and he come from 10 generations of Rabbonim, and your child never disappoints you because he says that he wants to grow up to be a big Baal Chesed. He feels in a tia, he's cut out to be a Rebbe and a Baal Tshuva Yeshiva. In generations of Rabbanim, he's breaking the chain. What World War II did to so many families, he's doing to yours. Accept that? Not wrong at all. Not at all. Unfortunately, very often we would press the child to be what we always imagined that they would be. Children today are exposed to so many different types of lifestyles. And I'm not talking good and bad. I'm talking different types. What may not be best for you, may be best for him. You know, a man who's a Rebbe in a very prestigious yeshiva here in the neighborhood had a son that wasn't from. The child was coming back and he wanted to go to a certain yeshiva. A yeshiva that's made for people that aren't from that are coming back. Although b'shum oifin wouldn't have it. It's pasnished for his family that the child should go to that yeshiva. He forced the child to go to a yeshiva that wasn't best for him. Now, he's even less happy because it's pasnished for this family to have a kid that doesn't keep Shabbos. So often I come across it where a family is going to say, our daughter, Rabbi Shapiro, I know you work with lots of kids and they become lots of... Our daughter has to become like this. She's not like these other kids. This is what she has to be. You want her to go to this Beis Yankov, or this type of Beis Yankov. This is our family. This is what our family is. Usually, 90% of the time, this comes up where the kid in question is like the youngest. Or there are four or five siblings on top of him or her that have already gone through one direction. Now, this child is going into a different one. If a kid is in trouble, you have to do what's best for the kid. What's best for the child? That's always what you have to ask. What's best for the child? Not what's the best school, and let's try to send him or her to the best school. Not what's the best job, and give him or her the best job. What's the best for the child? What's the best for the girl? What's the best for the boy? There's no such thing as best. What's the best you can do is that putting out the biggest Talmidei Chachamim? Or the yeshiva that elevates the students that they get the highest percentage? What does it mean, the best? The best for who? If you had a choice to go to the best yeshiva or the worst yeshiva, where would you go? Where would you send your kid? Isn't that a good riddle? If you had a chance, a choice, to send your child to the best yeshiva, the worst yeshiva, where would you send your kid? You know what the answer is? Whichever's best for him. Different than cars. If you had a chance to drive the best car or the worst car, you'd take the best car. To live in the best neighborhood or the worst neighborhood, you'd live in the best neighborhood. But when it comes to Ruchnius, best is defined by best for whoever. Where would you send your child? To whatever yeshiva is best for him. How much should I force my child to learn? How much should I press my child? How much should I turn my back on? How much should I tolerate? How much should I not tolerate? All these questions come all the time. The answer is, whatever is best for the child. There are no rules what you should... Oh, you should treat your children. No, there are rules. Of course there are. But only until a certain point. After that point, each child is an individual. And each family has its own rule book. What works for one won't work for the other. Not only does each family have its rule book, each individual in the family has its rule book. If you have five brothers in the same family, they could become five different people. You wouldn't even know that they're brothers. All chashuv yidden, all successes in their own way. Very rare. We have parents, but it does happen. We have parents skilled enough to bring up each child according to his own potential. First step in bringing up the child according to his own potential is for us, the parents, unshackle ourselves from these generic concepts of success, and the generic concepts of best, and the generic concepts of failure, because we are only limiting and narrowing our minds and our grasp and our ability to be mechanech our children. Al pi darkoi. Now, unfortunately, yeshivas cannot cater to the individual child as much as we would like. No matter how small the classes, no matter how much individual attention, the yeshiva still has to cater at once, to a large extent, to everybody in the school and everybody in the class. And although there are so many different yeshivas, in a way, they are very similar to each other. Now, there are children today that the yeshiva system is not what they need. could make a custom-made yeshiva for them, it would be nothing like anything we have. And this is not a criticism on the yeshivas. The yeshiva is not a mechuyev, nor should it try cater to every individual in the world, because it's impossible. If they would, they'd have to close their doors. The fact is that you may have a child, no matter what yeshiva you send him to, it won't really be the right yeshiva for him. That's the case. There are two things you have to do. Number one, you have to find the best yeshiva for him, relatively speaking. Make sure he gets a lot of individual attention from the Hanhola. You have to speak to his Rebbe, to the Menahel, and make them understand the child's unique needs. More often than not, the yeshiva will bend over backwards to try to help. But number two, this child needs his family more than ever. This child needs the family that can cater to his individual needs, chinuch-wise, more than the yeshiva can. He needs his father. He needs his mother. He needs their time. He needs their attention. He needs their ear and their guidance and their direction. And he needs them to understand him as an individual. Again, he doesn't need them to try to make him into the same, a carbon copy, a clone of everybody else. He doesn't need them to try to make him into a copy of them, of the parents. He needs his parents to understand him as an individual, because he's not getting that understanding elsewhere. His parents are the most capable and the best position to do this. Have such a child, you have to know that he needs you more than the average child. I remember once wrote an article about individuality in children, and I talked about it on one of the tapes. Somebody came to me and told me that they have a friend, Rabbi Shapiro, that I have a friend that read your article, and she was crying. Because the theoretical situation that you described in the article about a child that has no place in our system, that's her child, that's her son. She was crying. And I'm sure she's not the only one. It is sad. Far, far from hopeless. Take chizuk in the fact, if this is the case by you, that those people that are individual and unique are the ones who will grow up to stand out among the crowd. And if successful, are the ones who everybody is going to turn to for their individual and unique talents and abilities and personality. Because to be like everybody else, we don't need you. Different than everybody else, we will need you. And it's a big nisoyan. But the reward is great. And if that's the case, that child is going to need you, the family, to give him the chinuch that he as an individual needs. Okay. Have a good night, everybody, and thank you very much for coming.